You know, we are in the fall holiday season. If you don't realize it or not, we are. And as I mentioned last time I spoke, we were looking at coming upon the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and all of those days. And I mentioned to you that I was going to be presenting a sermon, three of them, on the return of Jesus Christ and the millennium. So this is the second part of the sermons that I'm going to be giving, the second of the three, on the millennium and Christ's return. And I thought that would be a very, very good subject to cover, considering that we are in the fall holy days. Now, let's first of all review a little bit about what we discussed last time we had the first sermon. And we discussed four major points. The first one was the day of the Lord. And that's talked about in Revelation and many places. Let's go to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. And we're going to look at Revelation chapter 6 and begin to read in verse 12. I looked when he opened the sixth seal. So this is the sixth of the seven seals. And there was a great earthquake. The stars of heaven fell from the earth, heavenly signs. The sky rolled up. And then notice verse 17. All of these signs are encapsulated in the following verse, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? So one of the things we discussed last time was God's great day of wrath, sometimes called the day of the Lord, mentioned in the book of Revelation in the first chapter, also in the book of Zechariah, and many other places. Another thing that we discussed was a trumpet blast of Revelation chapter 8. This introduces the various heavenly signs there are, which included an asteroid hitting the earth, possible comet, meteorites, and the sky darkening, and the moon becoming blood red, and people hiding in the dens and the caves of the earth. And then after that, we talked about the devastation on the earth. We discussed the Old Testament prophecies about the return of Jesus Christ, how Jesus Christ is going to be returning, and that he will return to set up a kingdom. So we looked at the devastation that is going to occur on the earth before Jesus Christ returns. And then we looked at what happens after he returns, the millennial rule, and the fact that there's all kinds of thousands of Old Testament scriptures that deal with a prophecy of him coming to the earth and setting up a kingdom. Now today in this sermon, we're going to cover some additional concepts and changes that occur when the millennium arrives. We talked about a few of those last time. This is a very broad subject, the changes that occur during the millennium. And so we're going to look at another couple of things that occur during the millennium and will occur after Jesus Christ returns. Now, let's first of all look at the millennium in the perspective of the book of Revelation. Let's go to Revelation chapter 19. And in Revelation chapter 19, we have the heaven exalting over Babylon, because in Revelation 18 and Revelation 17, we have Babylon being described. In Revelation 18, we have the fall of Babylon and what happens to it. And then that leads right into chapter 19. So we have the fact that Babylon has fallen. We also have in verse 7 and on about the marriage supper of the Lamb. We are those that are going to be participating in the marriage supper of the Lamb. You and I are going to be married to Jesus Christ, so there has to be a marriage. So the Lamb is Christ. The marriage supper of the Lamb is those of us that are going to be with him, ruling and reigning with him as a bride. Now, in verse 11, I saw heaven open, and this describes the return of Jesus Christ. Now, I want you to think of the fall holy days. The fall holy days consist of trumpets. They consist of the Day of Atonement. They consist of the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles and the Tabernacles Feast. And then they consist of the last great day. So we have four holy days that are going to be coming up. September the 23rd, September the 23rd begins the fall holy days with the Feast of Trumpets. And so we have the trumpets, atonement, tabernacles, and the last great day. I want you to notice the events in Revelation chapter 19 and 20 as they personify these events. In Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 on, we have Jesus Christ returning. It says here, I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. He sat on him. His eyes were like the flame of fire in verse 12. And in verse 16, he's King of kings and Lord of lords. And we are the little S there. We're the plural kings and we're the plural lords. He's the Lord of all of the lords. And he's the king of all of the kings. And that implies that there's more than one king. He's ahead of all the kings, but there's many kings. And so forth and so on with the lords. So in chapter 19 from verse 11 on, we have Jesus Christ returning. It describes what happens. It describes, gathering of, together of all the birds of prey, come and eat the flesh of captains and all of this. You can have this described to you again in Zechariah chapter 14. So we have Jesus Christ returning, which is symbolized by what holy day? Symbolized by the Feast of Trumpets. So Feast of Trumpets is symbolized by what occurs in the last half of Revelation 19, which is Jesus Christ returning, the beast and the false prophet being cast into the lake of fire, and all of that. Now, what happens after the Feast of Trumpets? Well, we've got the Day of Atonement. Notice chapter 20, verse 1. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of that dragon, that serpent of old, who was the devil and Satan, and bound him, didn't say it killed him or destroyed him, bound him for 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, set a seal on him, and that he's not going to be able to deceive the nations for at least 1,000 years. This is symbolized and personified by the Day of Atonement. So in chapter 19, we have the Feast of Trumpets being personified by Christ returning. In Revelation chapter 20, we have the Day of Atonement being symbolized by what occurs in the first four or three verses. You remember Leviticus 16, the scapegoat and all of that, and the goat was taken, which symbolized Satan, because the other goat was killed, which symbolized Christ. We all know that. Well, putting it together here, we see here that this being here, Satan, is bound for 1,000 years. He's not killed. He's not destroyed. He's not removed, other than, he's not removed where he can't come back. He is only incarcerated for 1,000 years. And then later on, it says he comes back. Why wasn't the goat in Leviticus 16 killed? Let's just push him off a cliff. No, him being alive symbolized something. That goat symbolized Satan. Day of Atonement, Revelation 16, occurs on the 10th day of the 7th month. And so here we have in chapter 20, the first three verses, the Day of Atonement being personified. What happens after the Day of Atonement? Oh, the Feast of Tabernacles. That's what happens. After we don't eat for a day, a few days later, we go to the feast. Notice verse 4 of Revelation 20. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus. And it talks about them being resurrected, and the last part of verse 4, reigning with Christ for a millennium. Spanish is mil años. A millennium is Latin for 1,000 years. So here we have us. I wish I was mentioned in the Bible. You are. You and I are going to reign for 1,000 years. This is personified by what? Feast of Tabernacles. And then after the Feast of Tabernacles, notice verse 5. But the rest of the dead did not live again until the millennium was finished. This is the first resurrection, referring to what's in verse 4. Verse 6, you are blessed and holy if you are in the first resurrection, because you will never die again. That's what it's getting to. You will not suffer the second death. What is the second death? As I mentioned many times in my sermons, if you just look at the word second death for what it means, it actually means you die twice. You die again. If you've been resurrected and then you're resurrected again and you get cast in the lake of fire, that's the second death. You've died twice. So what happens after the Feast of Tabernacles? The last great day. Humanity is offered salvation. That's covered in verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heavens fled away, and there was found no place for him. And I saw the dead, great and small. Now, if you're dead and now you're standing, I think there's been a resurrection. So there's been a resurrection and you're now standing. And another book was opened. The books were opened. The word Bible means books. And the Bible was opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. People are going to be offered salvation. Their names are going to be written in the book of life. So what I want you to see is, at the beginning and the of the millennium, or right before Jesus Christ returns, we have, let me rephrase that, before the millennium, Jesus Christ returns. We have Satan being bound. We have the millennium taking place, and then we have the symbolism of the last great day in what's being said about the books being opened. So here in Revelation 19 and 20, we have a framework for the last four holy days. You remember, maybe never thought about that, but that's very implicit in there. Now, all of this is occurring, symbolized by the holy days. Brethren, you and I are fortunate because God has told us what he's going to do. How do I get to your house? Well, before GPS, you go here, and you go over here, and then you take a left here turn, and there's going to be a red stop sign here with a ribbon on it, because I want you to get to my house, and then you're going to take a right down there, you're going to go down a dirt road, there's going to be a pond on the right-hand side, with a third house on the left. You have a plan. You and I have been given a plan of salvation. That's in the holy days. Right here, we are given a plan. So when we begin to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of the Feast of Trumpets, we keep all those days, we're looking at keeping God's plan. So, what happens as part of God's plan? Part of God's plan is he's going to bring a kingdom. He's going to bring a kingdom. Let's look at a couple of verses that deal with this kingdom that is going to be brought. In Daniel chapter 2, let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. You know, at the youth camp this year, the motto of camp was "Seek ye first the kingdom," and I gave a Christian living class, and I told them, in order to seek the kingdom, you have to know what the kingdom is, because you're looking for it. And seeking the kingdom is actually, you know, following the laws and doing the things you need to do to be in that kingdom. And in Daniel chapter 2, we have an overview of that kingdom that's coming. We begin to read in verse 29, and it talks about the king dreaming. I'm not going to read you all the scriptures, but he dreams that there's a golden head on this image, that there's a chest and arms of silver, that there's a midsection of bronze or brass, and that there's legs of iron, two divisions to the iron kingdom, and then the 10 toes. And the stone, cut without hands, comes down, hits the feet, the image falls down, gets blown away, and that stone that comes from heaven, cut without hands, becomes a kingdom and fills the whole earth. So here in the book of Daniel, we have a description given through the symbolism of a great image about God's kingdom coming. I always wonder what the Protestants do with those scriptures. You know, those are very specific scriptures. Oh no, the Old Testament, it's been done away with. It doesn't apply anymore. Well, God went through a lot of trouble to get these scriptures recorded, and you mean to tell me they don't apply? Well, they're all symbolic. You know, this represents the church, or it represents the Roman Catholic Church, or it represents the rise of Protestantism, or it represents whatever. There was a Babylonian kingdom that existed. There was a Medo-Persian empire that existed. There was a Greek kingdom that existed. There is and was a Roman kingdom that existed. Why would the kingdom that replaces them all be spiritual? Now, it has spiritual components. But, you know, when we say spiritual, most people think fluffy thoughts. It doesn't really apply, you know. You know, you tell somebody, I'm going to give you $200, but I'm not speaking spiritually. Oh, then you really don't mean it. No, when the Bible says spiritual items, it's actually more real than physical items. What I'm getting at is there is a kingdom coming, brethren. There is a kingdom coming, delineated in many, many scriptures. Verse 35 of Daniel 2. Last part, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. You know what a mountain represents in biblical prophecy? It represents a kingdom. This stone becomes a kingdom, and it fills all of heaven. I'm sorry, I misread that. It fills all of the earth. It's going to be an earth-ruling kingdom. You know, in Acuna a few months back, I gave a series of sermons on the coming millennial temple. The coming millennial temple exists because Christ has to have a place to rule from, because he's going to rule from the earth. And so here we have this kingdom. So the first thing that we need to notice is that there are things that are coming that's symbolized as the holy days we keep. Those are going to be literal things, but God has given us a map. Now, when you get a map and you look at it, you don't say, this doesn't really apply. No, you say, this is how I get there. Without this map, you ever been traveling? My wife and I used to do a lot of traveling. You're in the car. Your wife is navigating. Get the map. What map? Well, if you don't have a map, you're lost. The map represents real things. So this map that God has given us, which are the holy days, represents real things that are coming. And one of the things that's coming is a kingdom. Now, before we look at some of the attributes of this kingdom, and we're in the fall holy day season, and it's important to realize about the millennium and what's going to happen during the millennium, the thousand-year rule of Christ, the establishment of the kingdom, and all of those things. And let me just tell you something, brethren. The millennium is the beginning. It's not the everything. There's been two millenniums since Christ came and died and was resurrected. Well, you know, the first 1,000 years and the second 1,000 years. There's almost been two millenniums. And if he was crucified in 30-31 AD, then there's pretty soon going to be two millenniums between his death, resurrection, and, you know, his not return yet. But what I'm getting at is people look at it, oh, 1,000 years, that's a long time. It is not. It's a short amount of time in the great scheme of things. Now, when you're 7 years old, yes. But as you get older, you realize that's not very long. Now, before we look at this millennial rule that's coming, let's consider the state of the earth now. The state of the earth now. What are some of the things that you see in the world today when you look at the world we're living in? I see a lot of religious confusion. The churches are confused. Gays, no gays. Women in the pulpit, no. Doctrines, Sunday. How do we relate to wars? How do we relate to politics? There's no clear teaching anymore in the churches of the world. People don't, you know, you can ask a Catholic, what do you believe? Well, I'm not sure. I know that I'm a Catholic. You ask a Baptist, what happens to you when you get to heaven? Oh, I don't know. You know, you ask an Episcopalian, what about this? Well, I'm not really sure. Churches, brethren, are completely confused about the basic doctrines that you and I understand. They're confused about what they believe. This world is controlled by a great false religious system that permeates everything, and it is in the background. This system, Revelation 18, is based on Babylonian worship. The world is also full of her daughter churches. Some people in the world are even questioning whether there's a God. How about science? Maybe we can get into science. Artificial intelligence is great, but you know, like everything else that's scientific and technological, it can be abused. I'm on my cell phone 18 hours a day. Is that good? No, it is not. Not good. I remember reading a comment in some internet site, and it said, I have really reduced my time on Facebook because Facebook is not a good thing. I'm now down to 5 hours a day. So we're wasting our time with technology, the widespread acceptance of the theory of evolution. Technology is being used for destructive and pornographic purposes. So some people think the answer is technology. No, technology just allows us to sin on a more efficient level. How about the breakdowns of morals? Do I need to bring to your attention the fact that some people cannot find the right restroom? Or about, should we live together or not? You can go to many of the world's churches, and if you could turn everybody purple that was living together in the churches, vast majority of the people would be turning purple, because there's no teaching about that. A general sense of immorality. Even non-religious people can sense that something is wrong. There's disease and death. Oh, I exercise. I do this diet. I do this. I do that. I look good in the mirror. You know, I spend 4 hours a day in the gym. You're going to be dead in 45, 50 years anyway. What about your spiritual life? People, something's wrong. We have our disease is rampant. No matter what you do, how well you take care of yourself, we are going to die. We are going to die. Death is everywhere. Wars. Look at Israel. Look at Hamas. Look at I haven't even mentioned Vietnam, Panama, Afghanistan, and others I'm not going to mention. Wars everywhere. Abortion. You know that more people are killed by abortion than were killed in World War II? We considered World War II a catastrophe. Where do these evils come from? We have met the enemy, and it is us. Mark. Let's go to the book of Mark. I'll tell you where these problems come from. You know why we're not able to fix our problems with society and who's president and politics and even what we should do, how we should raise our children? You know why? And I speak in general terms here. Because of what it says in the book of Mark. Mark chapter 7. This is the problem, brethren. Everybody thinks the other person is a problem. My husband's the problem. My neighbor's the problem. The minister, he's the problem. Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7, verse 23. All these evil things that's mentioned in verse 21 and 22, they come from within. We are the problem, brethren. Your husband is not the problem. You are. Your children are not the problem. You are. You know, my job is not the problem. I am. They sent out a memo. The scientists all got together. They created this great committee to try to solve the world's problems. And they sent out letters to all the scientists. This is true. And they said, what do we need to fix to make society better? Some people said, well, we need to get rid of global warming. We need to all become vegetarians so that we don't eat meat. We all need to have this political system in place. One man wrote back, I need to fix me. I need to fix me. You and I, brethren, we're the problem. We keep having problems in our life because we think other people are the problem. Now, I'm not saying that sometimes other people are not the problem. And when I say we, I'm talking about humans, humanity. Don't take it personally, peace. You know. But we, as society, we're the problems. That's why we haven't been able to fix things. Because we're dealing with the same type of people, and that's us. So, what's going to happen in the future that's God's going to change when he sets up a kingdom? I can talk about technology. I can talk about outer space. I can talk about the cars we drive. I can talk about the medical revolutions. I can talk about health. All those things are going to be changed, and countless others. So I'm going to give you a couple, but these are not the only ones. And there's a lot more of them that are just important. But two of them that are going to be changed, I'm going to cover. The first is religion. Religion is going to be changed. Micah chapter 4. Micah chapter 4. And Micah's in here somewhere. Let me find it. There it is. Micah chapter, right after the 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, Jonah. Micah chapter 4, verse 1. And this scripture is verbatim covered in other books of the Bible. Notice Micah chapter 4, and in verse 1. Now it shall come to pass in the last days, let's see, knowledge shall be increased to and fro. It shall be like the days of Noah, a lot of violence. Does that sound like we're in the latter days? Okay, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain, that rock we read about in Daniel, that rock shall be established, and the Lord will establish his house, shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills. A mountain is a large kingdom, hills are little kingdoms. And the people shall flow to it. Many nations shall come and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, kingdom of God, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion the law shall go forth, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between many peoples. Everybody, brethren, everybody is going to know God. Everybody. Now, did I say everybody's going to follow God? I did not say that. Because a millennium is not perfect. But everybody is going to know that there is a God. So the first thing is that God will be around. He will be in everything. He's going to cover the earth with his kingdom. All are going to know him. Isaiah chapter 11. This hasn't occurred yet, brethren. Isaiah chapter 11. Some people put great hope in what man tries to do, men and women. We can't even agree on what kind of president to have. Isaiah 11, verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. You have a deep sea diver. He's down about 2,000 feet in some kind of submersible submarine that's designed to be able to withstand the tremendous pressure. He's down there at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, and he looks out his window, probably 4 or 5 inches thick, and he says, I don't believe there's anything like water. What would you say? You're nuts. Of course there's water. It's all around you. The knowledge of the Lord is going to be like the waters covering the sea. If you're at the bottom of the ocean, you don't have to be convinced that there's water. We're not living in that time now. There's coming a time, brethren, in the future when God's knowledge is going to cover all of the earth like the waters cover the sea. Another thing that's going to happen that's going to allow religion to be changed and the right religion to be established is, and we already alluded to it, is in Revelation chapter 20. We're not going to go there. Revelation chapter 20, first three verses. What does it talk about? Satan being bound. He's bound for 1,000 years, brethren. 1,000 years of perfect rule, perfect health, perfect exercise, perfect supplements, perfect human relations, perfect atmosphere, perfect air we breathe, perfect food, perfect bodies, because God is going to, reestablish Eden. And then Satan is released for a little while, and he leads a rebellion. If you don't give Satan his due, you're in a lot of trouble. Because Satan can manipulate you like nothing else. I remember when I was much younger in the faith, in the church about 3 or 4 years, and this man was older man, should have known better, was doing things he shouldn't have done. And I said, you better be careful. Satan's going to get a hold of you. He says, oh, I know what I'm doing. I know how to take care of myself. I don't worry about Satan. A couple of weeks later, he left the church. Satan just wrapped him up and got him into problems. And that's what Satan does. So one of the things that's going to happen, can you imagine this malevolent, demonic being who pervades all of the atmosphere here being removed? So he's going to be removed. Because of this, what's going to happen to man? Let's go to Ezekiel. We're just looking at a few things that are happening, not a lot of things. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 36. Ezekiel chapter 36. And in verse 24, God is going to take us from all the nations. He's going to gather us together. And verse 25, he's going to sprinkle clean water on us. He's going to take the heart of stone out of us in verse 26, and he's going to give us a heart of flesh. Speaking about the covenant, but also this applies to the millennium. What is God going to do? God is going to convert humanity. Salvation will be opened up to probably billions of people, brethren. Satan's gone. God's established his kingdom on Mount Zion. All the nations are going to flow into it. Those are nice sounding platitudes, brethren. They're not. They're things that are actually going to happen. Jesus Christ is coming. He's going to establish a millennial rule. And notice we're not going to go there, get into topic too long. So this is going to be something that's going to be really, really interesting. Zechariah 14. Kind of interesting to me. You look at Zechariah 14, second to the last chapter in the Bible, book in the Bible. Zechariah 14. The title on mine is The Day of the Lord. What happens in Zechariah 14? Jesus Christ returns. On that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, flee. Another subject there, but there's a lot of things that are happening around Jerusalem. There's a great war. People dissolve away. God's justice is administered. And because of this, verse 16, it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem, so you got these Gentile armies that are surrounding Jerusalem. They are destroyed by the returning Christ. There's some survivors, because this is what it says in verse 16, and it shall come to pass that everyone who is left, survivors of all the nations which come against Jerusalem, shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Notice verse 19. If you don't keep the Feast of Tabernacles, you're not going to get any rain. You mean to tell me that after Jesus Christ returns, his feet are established on the Mount of Olives, he destroys this Gentile army, that he's going to establish Easter and Christmas? I'm sorry, excuse me. He's going to establish the Feast of Tabernacles? Yes. Yes. I always like to talk about this. You're 400 years into the millennium. You're a spirit being. Your problems have been overcome. You're now ruling and reigning with Christ. And you're talking to humans that are still, you know, physical. And they say, what was it like to know about the Feast of Tabernacles? Because you were keeping the Feast of Tabernacles when nobody else was, right? Yes, I was. So you kept the Feast of Tabernacles when everybody else was pagan and keeping Easter and keeping all of these holidays and holy days? Yes, I did. So you knew all about this before? Uh-huh. The question I ask myself now is, what am I doing with that knowledge right now? Will I be able to look at that person 400 years from now, 500 years from now, and say, yes, I did everything I could to make that kingdom come to pass? Or am I going to be like, well, you know, just by the skin of my teeth, man. Just by the skin of my teeth. The world's going to be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, but the society's going to change religiously. God's kingdom's going to be established. There's going to be his rule all over the earth. Religion is going to change. The world's going to start keeping the God's holy days. Another thing that's going to be changed, not the only other thing, but another thing I covered about religion, probably the two very important ones. The other one is the government is going to be changed. We're not going to wonder if the president is going to do what's right or wrong, or the Republican is going to do what's right and wrong, or the Democrats are going to do what's right and wrong, or the independents are going to come to power, or if, you know, somebody's going to get this political system and make it better than all the others. God's not going to use our political systems, brethren. He's going to start out new. Would God be a Democrat, a Republican, an Independent? No, he's not going to be any of those. Now, do they have their strong points and weak points? Of course they do. Some positions in this kingdom have already been delegated. Let's go to Revelation 19. Revelation 19. We were there a while ago. There's a method to my madness, brethren. Revelation 19. What happens in Revelation 19? Jesus Christ returns. He is Lord and King. He is over all the earth. So, question, who is going to be the main man? Who's going to be, as we say in Spanish, the mero mero? Who's going to be the one in charge? Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is coming. There's no wondering about who's going to be in charge. It's going to be Jesus Christ. Not going to be the Democrats, not going to be the Republicans, not going to be the communisms. Communists is not going to be a reincarnation of fascism. They say, and you have to do this to keep abreast, but they say the more news you listen to, the more likely you are to be depressed. That's a fact. You need to put your mind on the kingdom that's coming, brethren, and put your nose in the Bible and study that instead of worrying about what's going to happen with the system we have now, or the system that's coming, or the one that's going to replace it. I was with my mother yesterday. She had a little episode, so we took her to the ER. Everything turned out well. But I could see her blood pressure monitor, her heart rate, all of this stuff, you know, on this big monitor there. And she started talking about politics. Her blood pressure went up. You could see it. My mother has perfect blood pressure. 123, she's 90 years old. 123 over 78. But when we started talking, she brought it up. She started talking about politics. Went up to 145 over 90. We started talking about grandchildren. Came down. Put your mind on God's kingdom and quit worrying about what's going on right now. Jesus Christ is going to be the ruler. Who's going to rule under Jesus Christ? Jeremiah chapter 30. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah chapter 30. And in verse... Jeremiah chapter 30. I'm sorry, let's not at Jeremiah. We should be looking in Ezekiel 37. Excuse me. Got my scriptures crossed. Ezekiel 37. Ezekiel 37. And in verse 15. One kingdom, one king. That's what my heading says. He's going to join Israel and he's going to join Judah together. Okay? Verse 22. And I will make them one nation in the land and on the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king over them. They shall no longer be two nations, nor shall they be divided. Let's keep reading. Verse 24. David, my servant, shall be king over them. You got the stick of Judah. You got the stick of Israel. It's joined together. No longer are they going to be divided. We're now going to have King David ruling over them. So who's going to rule over the combined nation of Israel and Judah? King David. How do I know that? Because that's what it says right here in Ezekiel. How about the tribes of Israel? Matthew 19. Matthew 19. Matthew 19. And we're looking at Matthew 19. This is Jesus Christ returning, or he's going to be returning. Matthew 19, verse 27. This is one of my favorite scriptures. Verse 27 of Matthew 19. Peter answered and said, look, we've left everything. I left my fishing business. Some of us have left relatives. Some of us have been disinherited from the will. Some of us have left lands. Some of us have... Have you ever given up a job for the Sabbath? Some of us have left business opportunities. Therefore, what shall we have? Now, Jesus could have said, now, Peter, you need to relax. That's not an important issue to discuss right now. He didn't say that. What are we going to get, Christ? Jesus said to them in verse 28, assuredly, I say to you that in the regeneration, when the Son of Man sits on the throne of his glory, where? In the millennial temple, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So if you're in contention to judge the tribe of Judah or the tribe of Simeon, the position's already been taken care of. You got God, David over Israel and Judah, and the 12 apostles over that. I'm not going to read you what it says in Luke chapter 19, because it says that some of you are going to rule over 10 cities. And I'm speaking to everyone online, no offense. Some of you are going to rule over 10 cities. Some of you are going to rule over 5 cities. And some of us are not going to rule over anything because we didn't accomplish anything in this life. And we're going to have our portion taken and given to someone else. Well, wait a minute. He already has 10. You want to get something done? Find somebody that's busy and give it to them. That's what Christ is saying here. So we are going to be rulers over cities. So what I want you to see is that we are going to rule with Christ. We're going to rule with David. We're going to rule with the apostles. The government is going to change. There's going to be no Republicans, no Democrats, no independent party, no Moose Party, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, and no Whig Party. None of that's going to exist. Revelation chapter 20. What's going to happen to us in Revelation chapter 20? Revelation chapter 20. We covered that before, but let's go to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20. And in verse 4, I saw the thrones, talks about those that were beheaded, okay, and the last part, and they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years, and you can read other scriptures where it says we are going to be kings and priests. Rebellion is not going to be tolerated in the kingdom, brethren. God is bringing in another government. Some of the most important changes are going to be governmental, and some of the most important changes are going to be religious. And there are many, many others. Now, this is a second of a three-part sermon on the millennium. In this sermon, we have covered the changes that will take place to this earth's religious structure. We have covered how the governments are going to be changed. In part three of this sermon, which I'm going to give, I think, to all of you on the Feast of Trumpets, we're going to cover some further concepts that are going to occur during the millennium.